from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Oh, good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning to you, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Tuesday.
I'm excited.
Why is that?
Because I woke up this morning, and I just could not wait to get on the air. Like, it almost felt like I was getting ready to get in the air and travel somewhere. Something about doing the G and Ursula Show had me excited today.
I thought you were going to say you had 8 cups of coffee again or something like that.
The morning's early.
You know what, guys? As a matter of fact, I've actually been drinking a lot of water this morning.
Me too.
But wait,
my New Year's resolution, which I don't call a resolution.
Are you guys saying you guys want me to drink coffee?
Mm-mm. Maybe just one or two cups.
Jeez, Ursula. Wow.
You don't need coffee. You have energy, the energy of someone who's had eight cups.
Hey, coming up at 9:30. Oh, what? No, you tell what's coming up on the show today.
Well, coming up on 9:30, on the first day of the legislative session, there was some serious fireworks in the debate over the vaccine mandate and whether that was to blame for the messes on the passes.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming up at 9:47, this is actually a touching story, but it might spark a conversation. A dying mom bought a billboard to help her daughter find a date. And we want to share that story with you. But we also want to ask, is it ever a good idea to set someone up with a potential future partner? So we're going to talk about that. And of course, we always want you to text us at 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. We do have a packed show, so we need to get going.
Ursula's top news stories of the day brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
And I want to start off with the good news this morning. Health trackers are predicting Omicron infections will start to drop in the Puget Sound region before this month is out.
At a certain point, there are going to be so many people infected that this virus is going to have a hard time finding new people to infect, and things are going to start slowing down.
Seattle King County Health Officer Jeff Duchin says once Omicron infections do start to decline, it should happen more quickly than with the other variants. In the meantime, while it is still spreading like wildfire, some schools are now going back to remote learning. Seattle Public Schools reported more than 700 positive cases in only a week's time, and the state estimates up to 18 districts now have schools that have returned to hybrid or distance learning.
I love what Officer Jeff Duchin had to say. Ursula, I think this news that you just gave is kind of like a steak. Get it off the grill. We don't need to keep it on there too long, because we keep it on there too long, I'll just mess it up. I'll just come up with some negative news. This is good news, right? Considering what he's saying, considering we're going to be seeing the peak coming up in the next week or two. And like he said, the Omicron variant not finding that many people that it can go after next, because we know right now, feels like everybody named Mama has or has had the Omicron variant over the last couple weeks or so. So I'm just going to go ahead and offer his good news. I don't want to try to add anything bad to what he just said.
I am remaining optimistic that Omicron is the beginning of the end, and this may be what gets us from pandemic to the endemic phase, and you know, we just have to live with it. For the most part, this variant continues to be less serious than Delta, than others, and that it generally spares the lungs. But the part is that it is infecting so many doctors, nurses, and healthcare workers right now. And any talk of the future is little consolation to those who work in the medical field, or those who are in schools, or those who are in jobs where they're having that constant battle with trying to stay at work, but also dealing with this. And right now, as you know, hospitals are overflowing and they're dealing with burnout. And for those of you who have had Omicron and you're saying, well, it's supposed to be milder, but it wasn't mild for me. This is for you. For many people who get it, it can still be a bear, and it is still a danger to the elderly and the people who are immunocompromised. And with all that said, though, G, although I understand the need to shut down in-person learning, I still believe it needs to be temporary. Remote schooling is not ideal. The kids don't learn as well. It's not good for the mental health. And so I would say that this is also a reason why parents should not be against all the tools that are available, using those tools, whether it is vaccination for those who are eligible, masking, social distancing, etc. A former Seattle police officer who was fired for punching a handcuffed woman in 2014 is now suing the police department, claiming that the department was negligent in his training and supervision and unfair in his punishment because he's black. Adley Shepard was fired in 2016 by former police chief Kathleen O'Toole, but 2 years later, an arbitrator ordered SPD to give him his job back. So the video of this punching incident had sparked outrage at the time, and the lawsuit claims that former Chief O'Toole was swayed by public opinion and imposed a harsher-than-usual discipline. The victim in the case suffered fractured bones in her face. She sued the city, eventually settling for about $200,000. Do you think he has a case?
No, he doesn't have a case, but at some point it could possibly. I mean, I never thought that he would be brought back during that time years ago, but he was brought back a couple of years later. The person that he punched, she won a lawsuit for $195,000, settled in that situation. But it's interesting, as I'm reading this article in the Seattle Times, it says, quote, Shepard brings this case to shed light on his wrongful termination and to prove that he has been damaged as a result of the defendant's vendetta against him and his unfair, unequal treatment by the defendant. And I'm never shocked when it comes to what happens with police officers, whether or not they're terminated or they're brought back. It is an ever-going, it's like a never-ending saga that happens with this. So, no.
Well, he's
I don't
trying to claim, though, just because he's black that he's getting this unfair treatment.
I know.
Do you think
yes.
that there's any...
No. It's not because he's black. It's because you're an officer and did you see the woman's face? And you see what you did?
Precisely. Exactly. Yeah. That is, if there's anything that's going to ruin your reputation, is that you punched a handcuffed woman.
I'm sorry.
Is there... And I don't mean to laugh, but this idea of... Again, and what happens when you use this, hey, this happened to me because... I'm black. In this case, it undermines when people actually have legit reasons, when there is racial discrimination that is legit. And this guy who apparently has a record that would show that he did not use good discretion when using force. And the police department, SPD, in this case, under former Chief Kathleen O'Toole, did the right thing. And they fought it.
Right.
And they fought it. And because this came up, this is actually what ended up this and what happened with the use of tear gas during the protests. That's what ended up not allowing SPD to get out from under the federal consent decree.
Right.
So I think that him trying to claim that it's because he's black, I think, is just nonsense. This morning, Seattle City Council members are holding a meeting to look into the use of ruses by the police department. And this comes after it was revealed last week that during the height of the rioting and the racial justice protests in 2020, SPD faked radio chatter about a group of Proud Boys roaming around the city looking for a fight. The Office of Police Accountability, otherwise known as OPA, recommended no discipline for the officers who took part in the hour's worth of chatter, but they did recommend discipline for two supervisors. But as the Seattle Times points out, they have already left the department. The OPA did not recommend any changes to the department's policy on lying, which Councilmember Lisa Herbold says is a problem.
The OPA did, as part of their report, identify as a problem that there was no documentation, but they made no management action recommendations. The management action recommendation is when OPA finds a gap in the policy led to a finding. And in this case, the OPA, despite the fact that they identified that there was a problem with the lack of documentation, they did not make a recommendation for a new policy requiring documentation on the use of a ruse. If you have no documentation, it's very hard to do oversight on that police action.
So a couple of things. First, do you agree with the use of ruses?
No, I don't. I don't.
It is legal in some cases.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, considering what, in this case, I don't think that it was a good idea. And I think that a lot of people have commented on it. The current mayor, Mayor Harrell, has talked about it. I don't like that it happened in this situation. And I also don't like the fact that these same folks, the Proud Boys, they were also instrumental in what happened in January 6 months later. And I don't think this was the right thing to do, because this could have brought amongst more violence. And one last thing, was this helping or hurting what was going on in the city at the time? So the answer, my answer is no, I didn't like it.
Yeah, I think what, so in the, I think there are certain instances where you can defend doing it, whether it's going undercover, whether it's, you know, in trying to solve a crime.
How about this in particular?
But this one in particular, this was, I'm sorry, it was a bozo move in my opinion.
Can I read what Lisa Herbert also said?
Yeah.
So, after the ruse was broadcast, word spread rapidly. I heard from constituents the evening of June 8, 2020, who were alarmed about the potential presence of members of the Proud Boys group. Given the reputation for carrying weapons, as the ruse stated, I text then Chief Carmen Best that evening. She and I spoke directly, and my recollection is that Chief Best's response was that I should be more skeptical of what I hear reported in the media. So... I'm giving, that's a direct quote. So in that situation, you have the police chief at the time saying, hey, yeah, you know how the media is. You should be skeptical of what you hear in the media. Huh. It turned out to be true.
Yeah.
So it's a bigger problem, and it always seems to come back to misinformation or the truth being misused. So there's the truth or there's a lie. Which one?
So exactly. What I think, though, is there were a lot of things going on. There were a lot of things that absolutely were unprecedented going on during that time. And there was a lack of supervision. There were some decisions made that didn't even include the police chief at the time. It sounded like there were people under the police chief who were making decisions, including abandoning the East precinct. And yes, there were things that no one had, they felt understaffed, and I understand. But then you look at it and say, okay, I can understand where this could have gone wrong. But the problem now is they've identified the problem, and then there's no recommendations as to change it. So in this case, I agree with Lisa Herbold that at the very least, you need to say these are things that need to change so that we keep track of when lying is or you know, ruses are used, or you have to lie and when it's necessary, because under the police policy right now, employees must be truthful in all communications except when lying is necessary for an assignment such as undercover to get information for a criminal investigation, and because maybe there's a threat to life safety or public safety. And I truly believe that the officer who made that decision to do it at the time thought that you know, police were going to get ambushed, and I understand all that. It's just the use of Proud Boys and saying that, given there needed to be more supervision, and they need to look back at that and go, okay, what did we learn from it? And that's what I hope comes out of it.
Yeah. This is.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead. No,
okay. Well, I just want to squeeze this one in, because you might not have heard this. We didn't know about this during the show, but just hours after the Seahawks celebrated a victory over Arizona in their final game of the season, backup quarterback Geno Smith was arrested for suspicion of DUI. He was apparently stopped and arrested shortly after 2 a.m. on Monday and released about 7 hours later. And his attorney says he's being cooperative with the investigation. And then last night, Geno Smith, who is now a free agent, took to Twitter with this message. He said, quote, being arrested brings a taint onto the reputation that is impossible to undo, no matter what really happened. I'm asking all of you to hold back on judging me the same as you would do for a friend or a family member. I'll have more to say down the road and ask that you bear with me. When you heard of the arrest, what was your immediate thought, G?
What are you doing? That was my thought. That's what I said. What are you doing? Right? And I say that because when you're a quarterback, you're in the NFL, and I'll tell you, there used to be a quarterback, Tavares Jackson. May he rest in peace. He was the quarterback, if you guys remember, for the Seattle Seahawks. He was the starter of the year in 2011, yes. And then he was the backup for Russell Wilson. And I'll never forget, we were all hanging out. We had a barbecue. We're over at his house. We're having a good time. And then later on that night, he had ordered some cars for us. We were going to all go out to a nightclub. And we're getting ready to go. And I'm like, hey, you're not going? He says, no, I'm not going. I said, what do you mean you're not going? He says, I don't go to clubs. I said, why? He says, I just don't think it's just not a good idea for me to be in the club. And so years later, we would always talk about that. And I would always tell him how he taught me about the role of the quarterback of every NFL team out here. The NFL team, the quarterback is usually the face of the team, the head coach and the quarterback, period, point blank. When you think about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you think of Tom Brady. When you think of the Green Bay Packers, you think of Aaron Rodgers. The quarterback is the face. Even though he's not the starting quarterback, he's still a quarterback. And so I would think better out of him. And no, I don't look at you like a normal friend. I have a higher expectation for you to do the right thing.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Of course.
Sure.
All right. So Gino doesn't club. And if I'm reading this correctly, he was getting off the team plane. Is that right? Now, if you are a bar or a restaurant, you have a duty to not overserve and make sure that someone doesn't get in their car. Why does that logic not apply to a player getting off a team airplane loaded?
Well, can't they take Uber?
Ubers are free. For
whom?
For NFL. Guys get to ride share, get that paid for.
So even more, and I want to be clear, he has not been convicted, and yes, we need to hold off. But if this turns out to be true, it just is, what a waste. I mean, what? I'm sorry to hear it, and I'm glad no one was hurt. I'm glad he wasn't hurt, and I'm glad no one else was on the road was hurt, and it was just unnecessary. Unfortunately. Okay, still ahead, we are going to have Chris Sullivan join us. And there was some real disagreement in Olympia. And my mind was going one way when I heard part of the argument. And then I started seeing the other side, too. And so we want to see what you think. Text us 888-973-5476. This is the G and Ursula Show. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. It is our Tuesday morning edition, and it has been rough going for anyone trying to cross over the mountain passes, and it's been tough for the last couple of weeks, and there's a lot of finger pointing going on, and that was definitely the case in Olympia yesterday, and we've asked our transportation expert, Chris Sullivan, to join us right now. Good morning, Sully.
Good morning, guys.
So I heard what you talked about in Seattle's Morning News, and I want you to set this up just like you did, because it was good, and I was kind of going through the emotions of each side's points.
Okay, so basically what we have is, and this is something that we have talked about in the past before, but what has happened in the interim is we had this really big extended closure of most of our passes over the weekend with that really heavy snow. And so what you have is people who are saying, listen, did the vaccine mandate, which cost WSDOT's maintenance department 151 employees, to blame for why it has taken so long to get the passes reopened. Why did it take 4 days? Why is it still taking days to get Stevens Pass open, which is still closed today, and it might be tomorrow or later this week? And so the head of WSDOT, the Department of Transportation, Roger Millar, had a chance to sit before the House Transportation Committee, and House Republicans, who obviously are not in favor of the governor's vaccine mandate, and Millar, who is in favor of the vaccine mandate, where they're trying to score points. Well, the House Republicans are trying to score points, saying, listen, we believe that the mandate, it has caused these pass closures to last longer. Why can't you put these unvaccinated former employees, if they are still unvaccinated, in the trucks, which are just by themselves. They're in a truck by themselves. They have no one that they can impact and go out there and do the job. And then you have Millar saying, well, they're not just in trucks all the time. They can go into the shop and have lunch. They go into the sheds and talk to people. You know, and if you get out of that truck and somebody else goes right back in, is that air safe in terms of transmission? So there are plenty of ways that you can get or spread the virus. They're not just in a truck alone. Well, then, okay, how can we ease some of the mandates so you can get these people in trucks alone and then minimize? And they're like, no, it doesn't work that way. And Roger Millar says the impact over the storm was so severe that losing those people to the vaccine mandate didn't make any difference, had no impact on the closures because the storm was so severe. He goes, I wouldn't have sent up anybody up there if I had 10,000 people at my disposal. And so he's saying the vaccine mandate and the loss of 151 employees has had no impact, and no impact certainly over the weekend. And then he added, because they have hired 200 new people since that vaccine mandate went into effect October 18th. So technically, they're plus 49.
See, now, that was the new detail that I had not heard before, G, and which was, wait a minute, so they now actually have more people. However, you can also look at that these people are not necessarily as, well, they're not as experienced. So you're going to get a drop-off in
and certainly, you know, that's something that came up. And a lot of truck drivers hit me up on the State Roofing text line this morning. And it's true. It can take you two or three seasons.
Yes.
Up there of understanding how this works or how to do it to become proficient at it. So you might be, and I'm not sure if all of these new hires have no experience, right? We don't know that, but we do have 200 people on the job after that vaccine mandate went into effect. They are still 140 people short total because they had open jobs going into the vaccine mandate. And so they're still down a little bit, but they're much better than they were when the vaccine mandate went into effect. And in fact, there are 9 employees who were originally let go because they didn't get the vaccine, who then did get the vaccine and had come back to work in maintenance. So that does sound like it's an option if that's something that they want to do to get vaccinated. And it's funny, then we get into this argument of semantics. Were they fired? Were they not fired? You know, House Republicans, they were fired because they wouldn't take the vaccine. Millar's like, no, the requirements for keeping this job changed, so we didn't fire anybody. It's like, guys, come on, can we just stop arguing over this? And can we get the passes open? Let's focus here on what needs to happen, please.
And that is exactly right, because no one cares anymore. Well, the biggest, most pressing issue is, what does this mean for the passes and for other roads that need to be cleared? So does DOT feel like they have enough people right now, or are they still trying to hire?
Oh, they're still actively hiring. Oh, yeah. They still are down 140 people, and they're still trying to boost that number to get back up to what they consider full employment. But Millar says they're better than where they were after the vaccine mandate, and that's kind of become a red herring to him for, the boogeyman out there for why things are going so bad. And let's be honest, that was a kind of an unprecedented storm. We haven't seen the passes close like this since 2009. So 10 or 11 years worth of not seeing these conditions, and it was nasty up there. I mean, they had 30, 35-foot snow drifts and avalanches and slides and things like that that they had to clear while it was all basically a whiteout blizzard. And so, yeah, it's the bottom line is, let's just get the roads clear as fast as we can, and let's get past all the arguing on this.
Yeah. Seems always been a boogeyman in our country.
Yeah, there always is. There's always somebody to complain at. There's always somebody to point at. Gee, you aren't wrong there.
Yeah. Appreciate it, Stelic. Thank you.
Anytime.
All right. Now, Ursula, you teased something at 9:47. I thought we need to talk was about an engagement ring and getting that back. Is that right? Is that correct?
Oh, my bad.
We have to do that.
Our 9:47 topic has changed 3 times in the morning. And just for everyone to know, G is not only remote, but Chef is too. So it's feeling a little discombobulated today for me.
You still got me.
There you go. Nick.
Okay. At 9:47, coming up next, should you have to give the ring back if you break the engagement legally? We'll talk about that next. Gene Ursula.
Well,
What's up, everybody? It is the G and Ursula Show coming up at 10 o'clock. You will now get up to 8 COVID tests per month covered by your private insurance company. I'm going to tell you how the Biden administration messed this one up again, too. I'll explain that.
Great.
That's right. I'm going to explain that at 10 o'clock. But right now, we need to talk. Alabama. They lost yesterday in the college playoff, but that's not the topic. Alabama courts are trying to figure out whether an engagement ring is a gift or legally must be returned if a couple does not get married. A court of appeals on December 17th ruled in favor of an ex-fiance who argued that a $32,000 ring, why are you paying that much money for a ring, should have been given back after they broke off the engagement. The woman actually sold the diamond ring, she admitted that, for a third of the cost. Let me just go right into it. According to the court records, he proposed to his girlfriend on Christmas Eve of 2018 with the ring on an ornament inside of a gift bag. He said she accepted, but later she called off the relationship sometime in 2019. She disputed in her testimony that he had asked her to marry him, although she said she assumed it was an engagement ring. But court documents state he asked for the ring back months after the split, but he refused. She told him that she had tossed the ring, but actually she later admitted that she sold the ring for $10,000. Now,
ouch.
Let me just get right to the point that we need to talk about. Should you have to give the ring back if you break the engagement off legally? 888-973-CHIRO. I have a feeling that we about to fight around here. Let's go.
So my initial reaction would be no. Once you give a gift, and I look at an engagement ring as a gift, no one's putting a gun to your head to give that engagement ring. I say it's a gift that you cannot expect to get back if something happens to that relationship, whether it is a friendship, whether it is your fiance, etc. That's how I feel. And I even used a word when you and I'll share that in a minute. But now I understand, thanks to a listener text message, that, and I had to look it up real quick, that there are laws about engagement rings, and different laws have different states have different laws. And in our state, apparently, an engagement ring is normally considered a conditional gift. So it is given on the condition that the couple gets married. And without a wedding, the condition is not fulfilled and the receiver is obligated to return the ring to the giver.
Hey,
has this?
Hey,
is this?
Amen.
Hey,
no, I'm saying that's just bogus.
That's bogus.
I feel it is bogus. But anyway, so there are some states where there are laws. So I think that in the state of Washington, you might actually have a legal claim to it.
Hmm.
But okay. There are other states where you wouldn't have any luck.
I'm going to simplify it. I do want to hear what Chef has to say. I'm going to simplify this. Stop putting the engagement ring, that responsibility, on the other person. If you guys want to get married, if you're getting ready to go snowboarding, right? And you're like, hey, I need to get some stuff to go snowboarding. Then you go buy yourself some equipment. If you're going to get married, then take yourself out to go buy yourself a ring. If that's the case, we need to stop with this. This person needs to be the one that purchases the ring.
Basically, what you said this morning is, why is it the guy's, problem to buy the ring?
Why?
If you want to get married and you want it so bad and you want a ring so bad, what you said was, why doesn't the woman buy the ring for herself?
Right.
Or whoever wants the ring, because the guy should get a ring too.
I don't tell you, okay, hey honey, you need to go get this Botox, or you need to go get this, or you need to go get this filler for the lips, or okay, you need to go get this lipstick.
You're talking about a tradition that has been around for a long, long time. So
there's
here's
a
my
lot
question.
Of traditions that
know,
have been
right?
broken over the
I know,
years.
Exactly. So
gladly so.
So there's one of us who's gotten engaged recently. So is that what you did?
I'm texting Lillian right now. Dear Lillian, in Washington State, if you don't get married, I get that ring back. G.
You want to know why that is, Ursula?
What?
It's because it's an obsolete tradition. You're supposed to give the engagement ring this item of significant value to the woman because you are taking her off the market and reducing her chances of finding another mate, right? That was traditionally how it is. I don't think that applies anymore. It's just a tradition to give someone a ring. Gee, 100% agree with you. My wife bought her own engagement ring. I think it was $10.
Hey. Wait, are you serious?
Yes. Are you going to call me that word now that you called G earlier?
Okay, for anyone who knows Tagalog, I called it. I said, G, you're being karipot.
and I
Tagalog word.
I put that in my group, and one of my Filipino partners hit me up and said, yeah, she just called you cheap. Somebody in Gig Harbor said, does this mean Lillian has to buy her own engagement ring?
Okay, yeah. Let's talk. Because it's easy to talk in these, you know. Yeah.
I'm sending her.
These conditional statements.
I'm sending her the receipt right now. I need reimbursement ASAP.
You know what takes away romance real quick? When people are cheap.
You know what, Ursula? It takes away the romance real quick when you're tens of thousands of dollars in debt for a ring that isn't even a wedding ring.
That's true, too. So why are you spending tens of thousands of dollars?
Because you try to keep up with the Joneses.
Okay.
Because
well,
there's a pressure.
That's your problem.
No. Wait, that's my problem? No, that's America's problem. That's America's
problem. On that, I will agree with you. You should never go into debt to buy an engagement ring. You should never have to choose between paying your rent and an engagement ring. That I agree with.
And then JR texts in and says, depending on who asks, you know, that's the thing. Why do we have to ask? Why don't you guys ask? How about that?
How would you respond to that?
Let me think about it.
That's my question.
Let me think about it. Let me get back
to you. In the headlights.
You okay, know what? Text us, 888-973-5476.
Hey, coming up next, the top three things that you need to know. And I want to tell you about this awesome idea of everyone being able to get 8 COVID-free tests and how I just think that this is a disaster plan. I'll explain why. We'll do that next. Gene Ursula.